Welcome to another International Women's Day special. I'm your host, Kirsten Thomas. Today, we will be in conversation with writer and poet Sharon Elliott. Sharon Elliott is a Seattle author and international poet who now resides in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She has been a writer and a poet activist over several decades, beginning in the feminist, anti-war, and civil rights movements of the 1960s and 70s, spending time in the Peace Corps in Nicaragua and Ecuador during the 70s. Sharon's poetry and writings have been published in many print journals domestically and internationally, and has been translated into four languages. Her poem, Border Crossing, appears in the anthology entitled Poetry of Resistance, Voices for Social Justice. She is an initiated Lukumi and Ifa priest. And in full disclosure, Sharon and I have known one another for over 20 years. We were both initiated into the Yoruba Afro-Cuban tradition of Lukumi by our godmother, Bobby Cespedes Obalade. And we are both priests of Yemoya and Ifa. Oh, mio, Yemoya, me ferefun, Yemoya. Welcome, Sharon. How are you this day?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. And I'm so thankful that you decided to participate in this International Women's Day. So let's jump right in. Growing up in the 60s with so much revolutionary change going on, what led you to join the Peace Corps and what was that experience like?
Well, I actually wanted to join the Peace Corps as soon as I heard about it. It was established while I was in high school. And then after I finished college, I was going to apply. And then I met a man who was already in the Peace Corps. And actually, we got married, fell in love, got married, and went back in. When we applied, we asked to be placed in a country in Latin America somewhere.
I know you spent some time. How long were you there?
Well, I was in Nicaragua for 2 years and in Ecuador for 2 years. And basically, an old story is that they hadn't developed a program for the women who came with the men who were going to be agricultural volunteers. So we made our own. And there were about eight of us. One of the things that kind of sparked my interest was we were trained in the techniques of the Pedagogy of Oppressed, which was a book that we were using to kind of stay out of our own way. And so we were trained to go to the communities and develop relationships rather than teach people things or ask them or to be something that they weren't. We found out what the community needed and what the community wanted. And in very rural Nicaragua, where I lived, the adult women didn't leave their homes. They stayed basically in their houses after they had children. And so I was working with teenagers. And teenage girls. And man, I have never met any more enthusiastic, committed, wanting to change their lives and their communities people than those girls.
I bet.
Yeah. And so they told me what they wanted to do and what they needed my help with. And the basic things for them in a, because Nicaragua was under a dictatorship, was that white people could get them in the door. And so we made plans, and basically their thing was they wanted to build a health center and to get the doctors, which were government doctors to come from very far away. It was a nine hour trip
Wow.
to our little tiny pueblo, and provide medical services. So that's what we focused on.
And this was pre-revolutionary time,
This
right?
was pre-revolutionary. They were still under the Somoza dictatorship. And one of the things about being under that dictatorship that was helpful to them was that Somoza had a good relationship with Nixon. And he told us that. We met him. And he told us that Nixon is my friend. So basically, if I went and knocked on the doctor's door, they'd have to let me in.
Ha.
So we planned a trip to the next big city to knock on the doctor's door and find out why he had never come to their town he was supposed to, and what he needed in order to inspire him to come to our town. And the Jefa, the leader of the group, who is a wonderful person, and she was black, which surprised me a little bit. I didn't understand that history in Nicaragua. She just walked in the door, and she took over, and she talked to him, and she got a list of what he needed. She found out what he was going to need to actually come up there. The Centro de Salud, the health center, got built, and the doctor came. And
Right on.
so it was a victory all around for everybody. And so then we went to Ecuador after that. And after the triunfo is what they called it, the triumph of the revolution, I went back to Nicaragua and went through the auspices of the Seattle Managua Sister City Association. And while I was there, I met Ernesto Cardenal, who was one of the revolutionary Sandinistas. And at the time then, I think he was in his 50s, and he was then the Minister of Culture, and he was a poet. I mean, he's an incredible poet. You can find his works, online and in books and stuff like that. And he basically told us that all the people that had fomented that revolution were either mad poets, or they were performers in some way, or they were singers. There was a movement called the Nueva Canción, which was young artists and singers, especially because Nueva Canción means new music, or new songs is what it means. And so they were developing music that came out of the revolution. And the observation I made was, when I lived there under the dictatorship, I didn't see anybody doing any of their traditional anything. There were no performances, there were no concerts, there were no dances, there were no,
None of
I
the art.
guess, none of that. Yeah. And when I came there with the delegation, it was all over the place. People were doing celebrations, people were, developing dance troupes, people were singing, people were publishing poetry.
It was a fabulous time to be there with this artist's renaissance and resurgence. The artists play such a pivotal role in the revolution. So, say more about the influence of this exposure had upon your writing and thinking.
Well, one of the things that was really important for me, because I had basically stopped writing after college, it was like, well, what does that mean? Me writing poems, what does that mean? And what I did was, I saw that there was a place for important things to say being said in poetry. And then I had a baby. And then after she was basically in her teenage years, I moved to Oakland. And that's, everybody in Oakland is an artist of some sort, at least the ones that I was meeting. And that's where I met both Odilia Galvan Rodriguez and Frida Francisco X. Alarcón, the two people who were the authors of that anthology that we first talked about, have it in front of
Poetry
me.
of Resistance and Voices for Social Justice.
Right.
And you're in there. I'm sorry,
And
go
what that
on.
was geared to was SB 1070 that had been passed in Arizona, which was the profiling law. And so there was a Facebook page, and the Facebook page was dedicated to poems that addressed that particular law or freedom in any way. And so we published, I was a member of that for probably 6 years, I think. And it's not the Facebook page is no longer active, but it was. And we published poems every week. And then we were like a funnel into Lab Logo, which was it's still going, and it's an online poetry and news outlet for basically Chicano people.
I wonder if this might be a good place to give us a poem.
Okay. Well, the first one I was going to read because my heritage is Scottish and Norwegian, and some people do go ask me, well, you're Scottish and Norwegian. What are you doing speaking Spanish and all those things? And I've sort of explained how and why I'm speaking Spanish. But I didn't know much about my own heritage. My dad rarely talked about his Scottish ancestry, and my mother really never talked about hers, and it turns out they were both Scottish. My mother's people came in through Ireland. I'll read something about their revolutionary history because that's what inspired this particular poem. Scotland is divided into two, sort of, well, three actually, sort of ethnicity groups. Scotland is only about the size of a third of Oregon, so it's a very small country. The Highlands are the north of the mainland of Scotland. And there was something called the Highland Clearances. And in Scots Gaelic, it refers to what's called the expulsion of the Gael. And the lowlands, where my people are from, their clearances referred to forced displacements of the indigenous population of the Scottish lowlands during the 18th and 19th century. This led to mass emigration to the seacoast, the North American colonies, and Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. I think a lot of people view the Scottish people coming to the United States as colonization because that's what was happening. The English were colonizing the United States, but actually they were forced off of their land. Their land was stolen by both the English, so they were colonized by the English as well, and the aristocrats, Scottish aristocrats. The clearances were part of a process of forced agricultural change throughout what is called the United Kingdom now. But basically, that is England, Wales, Ireland, and Scotland, perpetrated by the royalty and ruling classes. The abruptness of the change, which decimated the traditional clan and family systems of the indigenous people, and the brutality of many evictions. My ancestors are from the Scottish Lowlands on both my maternal and paternal side, Forrester on my mother's side and Elliot on my father's side. And basically, the Elliots were known as thieves. The whole lowlands was looked at as a terrible place because one of the problems with it's bad land for agriculture, so they couldn't grow a lot of their own food. But it was a great place to graze horses and cattle and sheep and stuff like that, which is why the aristocrats wanted it. But anyway, this poem was one of what I wrote for the anthology, and it's called Border Crossing. And then it starts with a Lukumi chant, which is one of the African chants, which I will read it. And it's to honor the ancestors. Aumbawauri, Aumbawauri. And with that chant, with those words, you're calling the ancestors to come and be present. I am going back before the funeral. The crossing brings me to the land of my ancestors before the singing starts, the banshee wails, the pipers float their cries upon the wind. I look at all the borders crossed or left alone. Who is dragged there? Who comes willingly? Who is ready? Who is not? I have been here all my life, standing at the invisible line between being and not being, between this world and the next. As I prepare to cross, I know that it won't be a crossing. It will be an acceptance, flowing, flowering, embracing. 10,000 feet have walked this path, being thrown across that line, that lie. Few chose it, their homes reduced to rubble and smoke behind their backs, their farmers' hearts forced to the sea to sit on rocky wasted land or on the boulders of the shore itself, forced to exchange their meat and wool and milk for unfamiliar fish that don't come easily, if at all, to nets cast by untutored hands. Weeping accompanies their journey out of the green and fertile highland valleys into the lairs of other clans, tribal people who will not yield easily until they too are forced to join the march, give up their horses and helmets, warriors no more. And what new border can they visualize? How can they keep each other straight? They learn to pull their plaid garments up around their shoulders, over their heads, the threads and colors creating small visual borders on the cloth, screaming, "This is me, my identity, my land, the place I long to lay down to rest. I carry it with me in sacred cloth. And when I am ready, when I have reached the road's ending and the last border stands before my feet, I will cleanse and wrap my body myself before the ministrations of loving hands can do it for me. And I will go back. I will be back. I will smell the peat and heather. I will hear the birds and pipes. The laurel tree and hazel hedge will welcome me. And the voices that I hear shall speak all the languages I have gathered and sing to me in one I do not know, but carry always in my heart." Thanks.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. So, your journey back and through to your ancestral lands, in part was, and this is because I know you, is in part due to the fact your life took you down the avenue toward African traditional religions, which is how you came to become a Yemaya priestess, Omo Yemaya and Ifa. And one of the things about our tradition is step one is your ancestor work, or right, you don't really get past go without checking in with your people. And so talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
Okay.
I wasn't in touch with my people. My mom and dad were a generation older than me, actually. My mom was born in 1913 and my dad in 1914. And as I've already mentioned, they didn't talk about their history much. I knew where they were from in the United States, but and I knew dad considered himself Scottish. And that mom considered herself Scotch-Irish, but that's all I knew. And so when I came to the table of Lucumí and was advised by the first priest that I was working with, he told me that the first thing I needed to do was set up an ancestor altar and start calling my ancestors' names. I didn't know my ancestors' names. There was no ancestry.com. You know, I knew my mom's name and my dad's name, but they were living. I knew their moms and dads, so I knew four people's names that I could call. And so I started that way. And one of the things about my mother was she was born and raised in Missouri, which is the South, and it's also was a slaveholding state. And I knew she talked about her mother going to the root doctors who would teach her some root doctoring and were black people, but she didn't say anything about the older interaction with black people in her family. And one of the my cousins discovered an article, an old article of when they came in through Virginia, my mother's family, and not my mother's immediate family, but her uncles a couple of generations back were slaveholders. And so, what that meant for me was a certain amount of wondering about who might be in my bloodline. So, when I was starting to call names, and what you do when you start to call the names of your ancestors is that you're bringing in the energy of people who have gone before you. And people show up who want to show up, whether you're calling their name or not. And one of the people that showed up for me was a woman, a black woman who had been enslaved by that branch of my family that was the uncles of my mother's people. And she identified herself by name, and there were other people in the ceremony where she showed up. And so she revealed her name to one of them. And what she told me was that there was a disease in our family, and that not a physical disease, that there was a disease in our family, and that my job was to heal it. One of my jobs. And she didn't give many details. I have some guesses about what she was talking about, but she told me at that point that she was glad that I had found an African tradition. And that was the only time I actually spoke directly to her.
Oh, this would
And
be a beautiful spot to hear what came out in your poetry.
the Sidonia poem. Okay, yeah, I love this poem very much. Sometimes I don't write my poetry, somebody else writes it and it goes through my pen. So this one, there were two poetry prompts in a group I was working with. And one of them was to write a poem in the voice of a family member, and that it should be a children's poem. So, in this case, I offer a message to my own infant self in the silenced voice of an enslaved African ancestor with all the love and gratitude I hold for her. And it's called Sidonia Speaks. You a treasure by and by, I call the mother in the sky. Her skirt be made of shell and sea. Gather round you, tiny me. See your eyes, so blue and clear, skin as light as ginger beer. Danger comes, holds you close, invisibility gives up the ghost. Sometime soon I say my name, unwrap my head, mokekere game. Mokekere means basically little kid in Yoruba. Gift to you, so strong and free. Plant ancestor, ceiba tree. Learn to dance, sing out loud. Keep the light, wash the shroud. Calabash pull all the tears should have been said over the years. Hum a notion, bake a pie. Shmm, say spirits flying by. Them white folks tried to bring you down. Put your spirit in the ground. Ooh, sorry, tearing up here. Yep, they did the same to me. Door creen open, show the sea. Take a good look at the water. You, sweet child, are the ocean's daughter. Black folks rise you up one day, send your behind out to play. Dip, dip, dop. Rain come down, clean the blood from out the ground. You and me, we hold hands, never let go.
Ashe. That's beautiful, Sharon.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful, honey.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank her.
Yes. Sidonia.
Sidonia.
Right on. So, we have chatted our way all the way up to you, moving here, your experiences, your early upbringings, and coming into your womanness and learning to be an activist and an ally, traveling. You're now a mom, husband, the whole nine. Which is very different for women of your time. I mean, the feminist movement and all. So, yeah, you all were straight pioneers and changed the whole wide world, which we're grateful for. Thank you so much.
Welcome, honey.
Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about your journey to Scotland, of when you traveled there. And you found your family crest and you were with the chief. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, what happened was I helped my mother sell her house. My mother lived to be 99 years old, and she needed to go into a care home. And so I helped her sell her house that she lived in for 35 years or something like that. And so she gave me the money, not all the money for selling the house, but the money that I had saved with the real estate agent. And she gave it to me and she said, "I'm giving you this money. Do what you want with it. Maybe go to Scotland." And I hadn't actually thought of that before. She and I
Wow, check
were
that
not,
out.
really close, actually. And I hadn't really talked to her much about what I wanted to do. And so I went to Scotland, and I went for 3 weeks and traveled, basically circumvented the country. Like I told you, it's a small country. I didn't go out to any of the islands, but I went places that I knew something about. And one of the things that kept happening to me was everywhere I went, ancestors would come around. And the Elliots have a clan, but really the the family name is more important than the clan itself. And there's a castle there that people consider the most haunted castle in Scotland. And there are castles everywhere in Scotland and in England and in Wales and in Ireland. And some of them have reputations, some of them don't. But the one that we Elliots call our own is called Hermitage Castle. And a lot of really bloody stuff happened there, that's for sure. But when I went there, it was off season, and there was like three people there and me. And suddenly there was a barbecue going on. I was looking around, but basically the spirits were so happy that I was there. There was nothing scary, there was nothing awful. It was just like family. So the day after that, I went to see my clan chief, and it's a woman, which is rare. And she's amazing. And her name is Margaret Elliot. Well,
Going,
and then
yeah.
there's one story that I like to tell. And I was in the little towns. I mean, these towns are all very small, and so there was either B&Bs to stay in or hotels. And I was staying at the B&B, but I had to eat at the hotel, and it was called the Grapes Hotel. But anyway, I came in for dinner that evening. And there was a woman at the bar who had this crazy blonde hair, and she was just laughing and having a great time. And as I was walking out after dinner, she said, "Why are you here?" I got that question a lot. And I said, "Well, I came to see my clan lands. I'm an Elliot, and I've never been here before." And she goes, "Well, tomorrow, can I take you up to the Long Cairn?" And a cairn is a burial place. And basically, it's a big pile of rocks. And underneath the rocks are the bodies of, people that have passed away. And I was in the area where most people who had passed away there were Elliots. And so I said, "Well, okay." And she came and got me, and she had an accent that wasn't Scottish. So I asked her where she was from, and she said, "I'm from South Africa." So here's Africa coming in, and she had owned a hotel in partnership with another person, a man, in South Africa, and her hotel was the place that they brought Nelson Mandela. They had brought him from the prison. They'd had to fly from the prison because it was on an island, if you remember, and put him and his wife into a taxi, and they'd gone to her hotel. And in her hotel, she and her partner had put them up the first night they were back in the country.
Wow.
And she said to me, "Do you know who Nelson Mandela is?" And I went, "Well, of course I know." So then we went to the cairn, and it was a low cairn, so you could sit on the rocks. I was sitting on the cairn, and I said to her, "Do you mind if I sing?" And she said, "No, go ahead." And I sang an Oshun song. I can't remember now which one it was. So I was singing to the Orisha. And she said that her mother had recently passed away, and that song reminded her of something that her mother sang. Anyway, that's my favorite story. And I asked her when she came up to me in the restaurant, before we'd had any conversation at all. And I said, "Oh, so do you come to this restaurant very often?" And she said, "No, I came to get you."
Wow, okay. It was divine, every bit of
It
it.
was divine. The whole thing was divine. Yeah.
The
And I said, "Well, had you heard about me or something, this gringa coming over from the stage?" She said, "No, I came to get you."
whole thing. Oh, Shay, I love it.
So,
I
yeah.
love it. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We've been speaking with Sharon Elliott. She's an author, an international poet. Is there anything else that I haven't touched upon that you want to say? Maybe one more poem?
Well, this extra one I do want to read because I have a friend in Scotland who makes anthologies all the time. And when Renee Good was murdered by ICE, he said, let's do an anthology. And I think he got, I don't know, 300 submissions or something. And I want to read this for her because the idea I was getting for her was that, you know, there was a lot of rage. Legitimate rage over what occurred and what happened to her. And, you know, being who I am, basically what I thought and felt was her spirit needs something. Her spirit needs to be taken care of. So I wrote a poem, and there's an incantation at the beginning that's directed towards the old woman that we were going to ask to let us in and let us give her spirit solace. So this is the incantation. Listen to that old woman. Don't ask her name. She spins story cloth from a holy stone hidden in her pocket, sticky as a spider's web, tight as felt. Final blessings come through her mouth, woven into empty spaces there, between threads of chance. And for Renee, the poem is entitled Say Her Name, for Renee Good. He named you by that word that never passes my lips, meant to erase all women, render them evil. You forgave him outright. Then he murdered you. Good is your name. I call you Calic, Stone Woman, Boudica, Rhiannon, Raven, Oya, Yemaya, source of all creation, courage of the force of mother. I hand you the small knife, take you to the river, bring oil and fire to cleanse the deceit, where there is water to cool it. Your boy child will never be alone. Other mothers will look after him, teach him, make sure he knows and understands the true ways of women and men's obligation to them. You will be welcomed, soothed, touched with love, kindness, respect, and the knowledge that you couldn't stop it, but you did what you could. And not knowing it would be required of you, gave your life.
Beautiful. I want to thank you for participating and agreeing to this wonderful, rich conversation for International Women's Day here on Listener Supported KPFA. And thank you, listeners. I hope you enjoyed this. And happy International Women's Day. Happy International Women's Month.
There you go.
Yay. Thank you, yeah. EA. Holding down the controls.
Happy International Women's Month. If you enjoyed this interview, please consider making a tax-deductible donation at kpfa.org. Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind? Run the hidden pine trails of the forest. taste the sun sweet berries of the earth. Come rolling all the riches all around you, and for once never wonder what they're worth. The rainstorm and the river are my brothers, the heron and the otter. Each other in a circle, in a hoop that